As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Joining me tonight is my good friend Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. What an adventurous day. What a lovely day. As I had to throw that Mad Max gif in there because it was just like everything, every game just had something. It really did. Like it was just like something magical happened in every game, it seemed like.
I mean, obviously there were some lowlights. We'll get to those. Many of them, including my still day magic. And my life, which still should magic. Be wonderful. We had a kick six. We had the longest field goal in the history of the NFL that was made, which is an amazing moment. Like that's just one of those, you'll remember that. Like, watching an NFL Sunday, and we'll get to that, but watching an NFL Sunday, I was watching with my brother today. I was at his house, and we were just like, are they really going to try to do this? And when the ball hit the I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, this wonderful day ended with some fireworks on Sunday Night Football. Kyle Juszczyk falls into the end zone with 30-ish seconds left, thinking, all right, it's a long way to go, but they only need a field goal. And I've seen him do this kind of stuff over and over and over again. The first throw that Rodgers completes on that final drive to Davante Adams, when he let that ball go, truly bonkers.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, the trust to understand, all right, I know exactly how much I have to put on this to get it over Fred Warner. I know exactly the moment at which I have to let this thing go. He just drops it gently right over the top. Davante gets it. They despite the ball. One more completion. 50-yard field goal. Go home. Packers are 2-1.
Like it was clockwork. Like
it's amazing.
The fact like we have like several of these to refer to now. Like not only just like overall, but just like national games. Like you know the Jared Cook one. Like that was you know against the Cowboys. Like the toe tap one. And it's just like that entire drive was like inevitable. Like after Juszczyk scored. It was really telling that the Packers defenders all looked up, not to go like, what the hell just happened? But they all looked up to see how much time they had left. And they were just like, oh, okay, we're good. I don't think they actually thought that, but I'm sure there's like a little inkling that they all had there. It was like, okay, we still have a chance.
Well, I tweeted out the dragon gift for people. I've done this for a decade now.
Years.
I mean, it's been the longest running bit that I have. I told Bill Barnwell once when he was at his height, it was probably during the 2014 season when he won the MVP and when they were just really rolling and we were doing the Ground NFL show. I said, he's not a quarterback. He's a fire-breathing dragon. And
that's what
he is. You know, obviously there have been those down years. There were a couple of them and this wasn't his greatest game, but I've just seen him do this so many times. And there's just nothing that can surprise me anymore. Somebody responded when I tweeted out the GIF and was like, you're a Bears fan that worships at the altar of Aaron Rodgers. And it's like, if you don't, I don't understand you.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I've told the story a couple times on the podcast over the last couple months, but I was talking to Nate Hackett, who's their offensive coordinator. And we were having a discussion about like broader kind of trends in the league. And he was heavily quoted in the story I wrote about the Fangio Staley defense and what offense were doing against it. And I said something about Aaron being Staley told me that he was the best quick game thrower in NFL history. And Nate Hackett stopped me and he goes, he's the best quarterback in NFL history. And people, it's not just me that worship at the altar of this guy. It's people who have been in the league for a very, very long time see him as something special and something different. And these are the moments where he reminds you that that's the case.
And these are just the ones we see, because sometimes the plays that happen in practice that exactly never, like, all right, like I remember Scott Tolzien sending me videos from practice. Like, I'm sorry, Scott, that if I ever ratted you out right now, but
I remember sending me that one that there was like a boot to the left where he threw it all the way back across the field. It was like a grainy practice video. Sorry, Scott. Legend, Friend High School legend, Scott Tolzien.
Yeah, it was like a 55. He was like behind midfield, threw it all the way across back corner, like one of the craziest throws I've ever seen in my life, and it was from practice. Like, that's like the Randy Moss stories. Like, I've seen him like high point a ball and ended up on a guy's shoulders, like stuff like that. Like, you know, like just those type of stories. It almost sounds like Paul Bunyan tales that these guys have. But that's the level that Rodgers is at right now. It's like just there's just countless of these, and even some of these throws that he makes are almost becoming like repeatable. Like, he almost, like, you know, just the benders over the linebackers, and just these throws are not just the one-offs that you go, wow, that was one of the greatest throws I've seen. It's like he's doing it now like once a season, like once every 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and it's just ridiculous.
Where are you at on the Packers and the Niners after tonight? I mean, I don't think that there's anything super illuminating. I think that the Niners are going to be a feisty team. I think their offense is still kind of weird. I mean, Jimmy has made some... What Jimmy does within that offense, I think you understand why they want him to be the quarterback still, right? Like, he can deliver the ball over the middle of the field. He's still got a pretty quick trigger. The way that they operate, just that yak world. I mean, that big Kittle completion is a perfect example, mm-hmm. right? He's going to be able to do some of that kind of stuff, but I still just, I don't know. I still feel like what they want to be on offense and their ceiling, all of those things are still questions to me, even after watching that game and them almost winning that game.
You know how, like, last year we saw what the ceiling was of a Rams offense when they had to rely on Goff, where you're like, okay, this is it. This is how much we can get out of him. That's kind of how it feels with Jimmy, especially last week watching the Eagles game back, which I watched every play as it was going, but then watching it back on film it was just, everything's just hard with him. And this is always the story with it, is that they can get the guys open and he's going to deliver it. And like, if it's on time and everything's good, he's going to stand, deliver those throws. But it's like, it's very telling. He only had two throws past 20 yards today. And one of them was the pick that after Alexander just made the great play on. And like, it's telling that they never really went back to the deep ball. It's like, all right, we took that away. You're done. All right. We took that toy away from you, Jimmy. I'm sorry.
People are making an argument that their offense has been super efficient over the first couple weeks, even while doing that. It's like, that shouldn't be the argument. Just because they're efficient, it doesn't mean that he's creating or helping build that efficiency. Like, the Rams were efficient, to your point, for years with Jared Goff as the quarterback. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should be trying to make it more difficult on yourself. There's a chance that Lance is not ready, but there's also a reason that they wanted to make that move in the first place. And I think that even if this timeline is okay, they're 150-yard field goal and two miracle throws away from being 3-0, you still understand that there is a ways for this offense to go. There is that final tier, that final step, and we're seeing what it looks like before that step is taken.
Which I guess is exciting if you're a 49ers fan. It's like, oh, this is pretty. It's not like it's doldrums and you're just like, wow, I can't picture this. We're going to talk about the Steelers offense going like, well, I don't know what the path is. We're maxed out. It's like, well, this is not bad. And we still have a lot more room to grow. If number five is actually what we think he is,
Hanging around with no corners against the Packers. Yes. Like, I think this team is definitely going to be there and be a team that's going to be fighting for a playoff spot in the NFC.
Lenore is the rookie corner, number 38. He is a solid player, man.
Good thing, because they needed to find one of those guys in the draft. And he has been good over the first couple weeks.
Fifth round corner, rookie's playing like he's playing. He's very heady. You can tell he's sharp and he's got good size, long speed. But I mean, he's useful already, and that's a fifth round corner. That's, I mean, good on them.
Well, I mean, they have him, and then K'Wan Williams gets stinged up. Josh Norman gets stinged up. It's like Spinal Tap drummers at this point. It's absolutely ridiculous. You mentioned the Rams, and you mentioned the Rams and how Stafford has taken them to a final place. The first 15 tonight, we are going to focus on, I almost said St. Louis Rams. We are going to focus on the Los Angeles Rams and what they did today against the Bucs, because in my opinion, that is the most impressive performance that any team put on today. And this was everything we hoped they would be. You know, I looked at some of the numbers and we had a long conversation coming into the season about how we talked about on Friday, the dropback area of their play sheet that could now exist, you know, in the way that they could play. on non-play action throws out of the shotgun today. So non-play action throws out of the shotgun today. Stafford was 24 of 35 for 309 yards and four touchdowns. He had averaged 9.69 air yards per attempt. This was not just a supercharged version of the Rams offense that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years under Sean McVay. This was a, we're going to spread it out, back it up, and sling it around. And they managed to do that at an extremely high level against a pretty good team that was banged up in the secondary. But I still think that the performance they put on today was kind of a declaration that this is a different sort of team that everyone else in the league is going to have to deal with over the course of this season.
Absolutely. It's that was the joke I made. And actually, there's going to be another guy we talk about later where this is kind of the same thing that's happening in their offense. Is now that this whole part of this playbook is opened up, it's just like, it's just another rock, paper, scissors that you add on. Like, you know, now you have a fourth option to go to that's like, oh, shoot, now we have to defend against that. You really get into three things you have to defend is hard enough now. And when I say that, it's run game, play action, boot. And then now it's drop back. That's four. And then you got screen game. That's top tier screen. I mean, that was really cool stuff they were doing with the screen stuff, like just isolating the tight end on the backside. Like they were just
they dressed it up two different ways on the same drive, right?
So cool. So cool. And they did the same way. They went four by one on both times, but they did it, like you said, two different ways getting to that and just taking advantage of that. And also, like a lot of times they're going like trips and putting like Higbee all the way out as the lone receiver, either as the ISO, like Kelsey, like a 1x3, or just like the on the trip side being like the number one receiver. And they're just getting man zone tells. That's all it was. It was just, and not without emotion or anything. And I want to say just a lot of these plays, they just gave, you know, Stafford a kill, a man zone kill or a pressure, anything else kill or something like that. But instead of going like run pass, like a lot of offenses do, they went pass. And they were just like, all right, we're going to go with our man beater. If you're not man, all right, we'll go with our zone beater. Oh, you're on pressure. Okay. We're going to run a screen like to Higbee on the outside. They were just a page ahead the entire day. Like it was a clinic. Like it really was on offense. They only had one penalty. They only gave up one sack. They went 10.
The line has been playing really well. That's another thing that they've really allowed them to function, because when they're doing some of this longer developing stuff, even like the Deshaun double move for the touchdown, some of the stuff where Cooper Kupp is like putting sauce on routes that don't even exist, you need to hold up to do that. There's a reason that people aren't running corner post corners. It's because you can't. But when you're protecting well, which they have been, you are able to kind of allow the offense to unfold in this way. I think the two screens to Higbee on the same drive, I think it was in the first, it was in the second quarter, I want to say.
I think
so. They came out, and you, like you said, he was this trips to the right. He was this furthest outside receiver to the right. And they ran a screen to him on third down with Kupp and Woods blocking to that side. On the touchdown, it was third down again. He was the single receiver on the right side. They ran another screen, just a traditional screen with the lineman blocking. The fact that they're just as comfortable with the receivers doing the blocking in that situation as they are with the offensive linemen, exactly to your point about penalties and protection and details, there's a lot of pride on this team.
Yes.
They have a lot of pride in doing things well. And I watched a team today in Chicago that played the Browns. It's the exact opposite. And when you have a team like that where every single thing is, we want to block well. We want to align well. We want the details to be right. And then you combine it with actual players and now a quarterback that can sling it however he wants to. That's what you see. This is the final product that you saw today.
The one very telling about taking pride, and we talk about this, this is kind of the sign that you have a real unit, or not even just team, but like real offense or defense or even special teams, is a Van Jefferson is when a role player steps up or a role player does something that's like, oh, shoot. And Van Jefferson, I'm not saying like, oh, okay, he's extraordinary, but he had this play near the end of the game. The Bucs brought a quarter blitz against a weak side zone that the Stafford saw at the last second, and he adjusted. He ran a side adjustment. They got the conversion, got the first down. They kept milking the clock. The fact that Van Jefferson, like Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, I know are extraordinarily smart receivers. DeSean Jackson is as well. Van Jefferson, like really their number four guy, is doing that type of thing, adjusting to the side to a corner blitz, is really cool stuff. And that's, like you said, taking pride. But even like how they dress these things up, like it's just so cool to see McVay in this new world. Like we've talked about a million times about 4x1 concepts, and like McVay's twist on it is going 4x1, but then going 4x1 empty, but with the tight end alone, having all the other four guys, the three receivers and the running back on their side. But rather than just going like, you know, we've talked about a million times is Burrow getting pressured and he has to get the ball out quick. He can't get vertical with it. They're doing a little better job, but getting vertical and all that. That's the downside of being an empty. What does McVay do? He has chip help. The tight end and the running back are chipping on those. And like you were saying, the DeSean Jackson deep ball, they had one against the Bears where they hit DeSean Jackson on the over. The same formation. They came to it like at least three times in this game. They hit Cup on a sail route. So it's like a triple whammy. Like you're getting the defense to make an empty check, which is usually with a little softer defense or a little more telling defense. You create an overload 4x1 formation and you get the tight end tells and you get the tight end lone receiver tell. And then also you get the chip help. And it's just like these little tweaks that just stack on top of each other. It just opens up all this stuff for them. It's really, really cool to watch this offense play. It really is. And we haven't talked about the defense, but they're stars. But it's just, this team was firing today. It was really, and the use of tempo. That's the other thing I want to talk about. Sorry, before I just have to. It was so cool watching them go tempo and then like keeping Sue and Vea off the field. Like anytime Vea got subbed out for the one or two snaps, they would go tempo, tempo, tempo.
They kept rolling. Rolling,
trying to keep them off the field. And you could tell the Bucs were like, oh, shoot. Okay, we see what you're doing. And I saw Vea on a third down sprinting in. Like I've never seen a big man move faster because he knew he had to sub in after second down. It was awesome. But it was just one of those things where the Rams had a great game plan. They executed it perfect.
We talk about this being a little bit of a coming out party for Matthew Stafford over the last few games. I also feel like it's been somewhat of a coming out party for Cooper Kupp. And, you know, Cooper Kupp has been in our lives forever, even in this offense. But I think that as it's expanded and as we've seen more elements of the offense, we've seen more elements of him as a receiver. And he did a little bit of everything today. And just every single thing he can do for this team, you know, it's short area stuff where he's running that little, I guess like a reverse whip stop is what I don't even know how to describe his touchdown down either. There. But he's also just, you know, slot fades from this, like with little picks, and that's his touchdown was the same kind of deal. Just they're scheming stuff up for him. And I just think that we're seeing every single thing he does well and how it's unlocking certain aspects of this offense.
His body control is so incredible. And
when you said he was 6'2 today, I was shocked.
No one realizes that with him.
I was shocked. He's an inch taller than DeAndre Hopkins.
Yep.
That makes no sense.
I just heard about a million brains just how many people listen to this bust right there? Just like that's the thing too, is that it makes his route running more impressive.
Totally.
And that is also why they're able to get away with all this stuff we've talked about with him and Woods being able to block. They use him as de facto tight ends. That helps. He's so strong.
He also is more of a catch radius than you think he does. He's made a lot of catches away from his frame that now suddenly make more sense because you think about that. Keenan Allen's the same way. Keenan Allen's 6'3", and no one thinks about that. So who else would be on like the he's taller than you think all-stars?
Oh,
because those two guys are like starters on he's taller than you think all stars.
It's the reverse DeAndre Hopkins.
Like, I can do the he's shorter than you think all stars. Yeah. Matthew Stafford is the quarterback.
Yeah. Mahomes kind of is too.
Matthew Stafford is the starter. Matthew Stafford is like 6'1". Like he is not that tall. And then 6'1", 6'2". Hopkins is definitely one of the receivers. He's shorter or taller than you think is tougher though.
But those two guys
are definitely on that team because I did not know.
I've covered the NFL
since Cooper Kupp came into the league. I did not know Cooper Kupp was 6'2 until today.
Oh, you know who's one? Is Ryan Matthews, the running back for that dude for the Eagles and the Chargers. That dude I did not realize was like all of like 6'1", 6'2". Like
Matt Forte, same deal.
Yes. Oh, that's another good one. Yeah, Matt Forte was another one. Yeah, like you think he's like 5'11", 6 foot, but just built. And it's like, oh no, he's like all of 6'2", at running back.
Speaking of Keenan Allen and tall guys, let's get to the Chargers win over the Chiefs today. I mean, weird game. A lot of different stuff going on. Obviously, the Chargers had a leg up just because the turnovers by Kansas City early in that game. Three turnovers in their first three drives. Weird pass interference penalty at the end that I still don't really understand that helped the Chargers win that game. But Chargers still deserve a lot of credit. Going for the throat multiple times on fourth down in ways that they should have. I mean, Herbert's just making like on the nails throws when the game is on the line. I mean, those two throws to Mike Williams where he's just manned up down to that side. I mean, they are starting to figure out how to use the pieces within this offense. And they did a good job against Mahomes today. I mean, I think if it's one of those games where if the Chiefs have the chalk at the end, they probably win again. But that's always how it is. So you need a couple turnovers here, a couple turnovers there. Make sure that you use all four downs and don't let them have the ball at the end. And that's exactly what happened. And now the Chargers are 2-1 and ahead of the Chiefs in the division.
The Chiefs went -4, the Chargers went +4. That speaks to the Chargers not turning the ball over themselves, like you just said. And now you kind of understand, after what just happened with Rodgers and the 49ers, you kind of understand why Staley was staying aggressive down there and going, we're not letting him get the ball back. Because you could see when these top tier guys, what they can just do to you if you just leave too much time. But I think these Herbert Mahomes games, this is the new normal now. These are the two Titans. Like, this is Batman Superman shit. Like, this is just what it's, this is, I mean, seriously, this is what it is now. Like, I'm telling you, next decade plus, we get two games of this every single year. It's going to be awesome. But Herbert was ridiculous. I mean, he's the touchdown throw he had to Keenan Allen to their first score.
The jump throw, a 6'6" guy doing a jump throw touchdown.
Jump ball over a guy trying to bat the ball down. He throws it underneath, like he double clutched it in midair. And also that play was stick, of course. And, but he went outside in on it. So he read it out. And then, so that this is like just Herbert in a nutshell, is like, he read it out perfect. And then on top of that, made an athletic as hell play, like getting around a guy jumping. But it was just the Chargers, like, designs had some awesome stuff, and they were just abusing the Chiefs linebackers, just like left and right, just abused them. I mean, they had them going every which way. Like, they had the orbit motion. Oh, Eckler's touchdown. They ran the orbit motion with Keenan Allen, getting them around the formation. They caught the Chiefs in a blitz. And so the Chiefs linebacker started pushing with the motion, but he didn't realize that he had Eckler in coverage.
Came out the back door.
Yeah. So Eckler's just sitting there like, okay, thank you. Like, it was, but that's the thing, is when you put those, that's why the motions, that's why it's so important. If you just do it with your stuff, because that was just a choice route, is you're making the defense now do math right at the snap of the ball. That linebacker had to go, who's number three? Oh, shoot. Like, he had to realize that his guy was not all the way to the opposite side of the field. It was like, it was a running back right over here. But that's what that does. It changes the number count right at the snap of the ball. But,
well, I pray that they start like setting for a beat before they snap the ball with all those motions. The amount of illegal shift penalties that this team gets is insane. Like, that's the frustrating part, is that you can tell it's still fairly new. You can tell that they still have some kinks that they're working out. But the way that all the pieces are fitting together with the offense, you can see the vision for it, right? Like, Mike Williams is that ISO ball. You are a true, true, true X receiver. We're going to use you in those moments. There was his sluggo that he had against Mike Hughes. I mean, it's beautiful. Awesome. Play ISO ball one-on-one with him, and he's going to win a lot because Herbert trusts him. Mm-hmm. And the amount of trust and the way that those guys are playing that two-man game is awesome. And then on third down, they're just destroying people with Keenan Allen. I mean, just on man beating routes, little angles, little picks. I mean, that's the formula. It's like, all right, on third down, third and short, we have this guy who's going to destroy you in short areas. Anything else, if we want a chunk play, we have this guy. And it's very cool the way it's fitting together. The one play I want to talk about, though, it's just like Stafford's the same way. You talk about that sail route to Cup. Every team runs sail. You know, it's like, it's in every playbook. But his ability to just, like, the way that you can spread it out and how just much it becomes devastating instantly because of his arm and the way that he can place that throw outside the numbers. I think it was in the fourth quarter. It was a 1st and 10. It was like 6.5 minutes left. The Chargers ran that same play action slide concept that every single team in the NFL runs, where the tight end cuts, slices across, and he's coming into the flat. The Bears ran it to disastrous results today. Everyone runs it.
Yeah.
Everyone runs it. So Herbert, instead of even looking at the slice coming into the flat, while moving to his left, rips a 25-yard throw to Mike Williams down the seam without stopping.
Yep.
So that's the difference. You can run the same plays everyone else runs, but instead of having to worry about the edge player coming off and just dumping it over him to the tight end coming into the flat, he just keeps his eyes a little bit further downfield and rips a 25-yard throw that's a chunk gain that sets up the game-winning drive. Like, it's just, that's the difference.
No one watching this game should try and copy any of it, like, as far as quarterback play. That's the thing. It's just a whole bunch of triples and home runs. Like, there's no singles and doubles. Like, it's just guys just like, like you just said, like, most times you call that play, hey, we hit the flat, we get a nice 8-yard gain, way to go. But it's like, no, it's hit a 24-yard gain. Like, let's just make it easier on ourselves to get 2 first downs instead of maybe a first down. It's like, that's what you're generating. He's generating 2 first downs. Like, I don't know if that's like an expected stat like you could do on these, but it's like, hey, that's the expected on this is half a first down. He's generating 2.5. And then that's what Mahomes and Herbert and really the top guys do is that they just go big game hunting over and over. Rodgers, I mean, obviously, but that's what they do is they just take these extra runs, extra yards, extra, they create these points that weren't there or maybe would have been harder to get there. And they just do it over and over and over.
The one he almost had to Guyton.
Oh,
it was a 50. If you guys didn't see it, I tweeted out just the video of it. He was drifting to his left and just let it rip from about 55 yards away on a line and almost hit Jalen Guyton for a touchdown. He almost knocked him over. The ball had so much juice on it by the time it got to the end zone. It's just insane. He's making like two of those throws a game. Yeah. So a really nice win for them. A disgusting sack for Joey Bosa against Trey Smith, by the way. That was like one of my favorite plays of the entire day. He sets up this in and out that just how smooth he is with that ability to set it up while consistently moving toward the quarterback. It's just so hard to deal with. As a guard, it's not even fair.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see that they're starting to figure out, all right, this is how we're gonna use all of our pieces. You know, when you come in as a new team, even if you're exciting from the start, the way that the Rams have been, the way that the Chargers have been to a degree, it takes a while. Mm-hmm. It takes a while to figure out and settle into yourself and be like, all right, this is actually what we're good at. This is actually how to use these guys. This is actually what their skill sets align with in terms of our vision. And I think that watching that process for some of these teams, Chargers included, they're going to clean that stuff up. Like those illegal shifts and the shooting themselves in the foot, I do think that stuff is going to get ironed out. And when you're winning games en route to that, that's always a good thing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Gentlemen, you have my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
All right, let's get to You Have My Attention. We do this segment every single week. During a day of games, there's a ton going on. My brother today was like, how do you do this every week? Because I got five games going on plus the red zone, and he just doesn't. It's information overload. The stimulus is just too much. And it's because when you're watching, things grab you. And that's what we try to do with this segment every week. What grabbed you when you were watching? Because sometimes stuff gets lost in the noise. What jumped out? And I think the first thing for me today was the way that the Buffalo Bills offense played.
This is what we thought. It was every time the first week we talked about how it was the Steelers more having a better game plan than anything that the Bills offense maybe didn't do. Well, I mean, I guess they just didn't do, but it was like nothing, no concerns with Josh Allen. I think that was maybe the best way to put it. Week two, same thing, funky game, but Dolphins had a great game plan, beat him in man, had some great robber stuff. And then Josh Allen was kind of it was making it tough on him. Well, not today. Today was not tough on Josh Allen. He was, I shouldn't say vintage, but it was like, yeah, but that's what it kind of was.
It was though. It was. It was the type of stuff that we're used to seeing from him. When he hit that first missile shot to Sanders in the back of the end zone while rolling to his right, that is vintage because that's exact type of play. I mean, how many times did he do it against the Niners last year? Like, we've seen him do that so many times. And when he hits that, it's like, oh, boy. like, here we go.
Remember we were laughing about Washington on Friday's show. We were talking about, like, their lack of contain. And like, just, like, all the bad stuff right there. And it was just like, oh, okay, well, I think the Bills really wanted to take advantage of that today with Josh Allen breaking contain on passes.
He did such a good job. I want to get into just how he dealt with pressure today because it was very cool to watch. But just looking at some of the numbers overall, he completed 74.4% of his passes today with an average depth of target of 9.6 yards.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It was 9.2% completion percentage over expectation. You should not complete three quarters of your passes when your passes are traveling 10 yards in the air on average. But that's what he was doing today. I mean, just putting the ball on guys. I mean, that downfield throw to Emmanuel Sanders, disgusting. He almost had Diggs for that one straight up the seam. I mean, he was very, very on point with his ball placement today. A couple things that I really, really noticed, though, in terms of just his overall play. He did such an incredible job playing in muddy pockets today. Yeah. So his ability to play with traffic around his feet, both getting throws off with people in his face and just sidestepping guys. I mean, Daron Payne won against Cody. I think Cody Ford was playing right guard for them today. He won, I think, instantly a couple different times and just very smoothly step up, break, step up, step out, keep my eyes downfield, make something happen. And how late he can get throws off on crossers, things like that, where he can really let stuff develop because of his arm. It just, today was a combination of everything. It was all of those things that make him such a special quarterback in terms of his gifts, all packaged into one. You saw the entire thing today on display.
It almost turns into like a delayed sprint out. Like how many times he would go like up and out, like, you know, yep. Like that. And that's a classic thing. And we'll talk about it with your favorite team's new quarterback, is that a lot of quarterbacks have to learn is stepping up into the pressure and then out. And it's hard to learn that. It really is. I've made the joke about leaning into it. This is leaning into the punch, though. This is like, I don't want to do this, but you have to. And Josh Allen was like, today was just clinic tape about it. Like Chase Young was just going wide. They had these wide rushes. And so Allen was just like, okay, I'll just step up and then loop back out. And like he did it over and over and over and over. But they had a great game plan. I thought this was Dabble did a great job. They were abusing the linebackers, which we had talked about might be something that might happen to the Washington defense. They were running mesh return. And he was just doing a great job of just not just doing the street ball plays out of the pocket, but staying in the pocket, just like late, like you were saying, just finding the crosser late. It's a settler late and keeping his eyes downfield. It was very, very cool. And it was cool to see the Bills offense kind of, okay, they ran the ball a little bit more. They don't have to lean on that, but it's just like, just have it in the toolbox just to make everyone's lives easier. But they did a cool thing. They did a tackle pull RPO. Like they pulled the tackle and they ran a glance behind it. And I was like, okay.
Oh, nice.
All right. So, they got a little new sprinkle in there. And I want to see, I can't wait to watch the game pass on it. It's even out right now. But just watch that and just see if they did that more, if they did any of those types of things more, whereas these kind of next steps, new wrinkles in their offense.
I liked a lot of stuff they're doing in the red zone. They would line up one of the receivers in the backfield and the running back in the slot, and then they would just flip. They would just flip. They'd be like, all right, this is the information we're getting. Now we just flip it, and now we just play. Now we know what you're in. It's just a very simple way to do that.
Yeah.
And then the Dawson Knox touchdown, they lined up in a 3-by-1 set with Dawson Knox as the single receiver on the right side. Cole Holcomb was on him. Josh was like, well, you're man coverage, I guess. So I'm just going to fire a missile back shoulder to my tight end one-on-one against the linebacker. And that's it, right? When you have these teams where they're coaches are putting them in good spots, making the game easier for them, and the players are already better than the guys they're going against, these are the type of performances that you end up with.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that, because that was actually another one I said abusing the linebackers. I was like, they put Dawson Knox out there like he was Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Just like, that's what they did. They just like iced him up. I know he didn't even hesitate. He hit the back foot of his drop and just missiled that thing.
There were several of those today. And that was the cool part, is that when they're playing on time and you can sprinkle in all of the stuff out of structure that makes him such a pain in the ass to deal with. It's really cool to watch. I mean, this is one of those games where it's just special. And I don't know, I'm kind of worried about what the Washington defense looks like. I'll be honest with you. I think that their front played okay today. I think that they actually were more disruptive than the final box score would probably indicate, just because Allen was so good at playing with traffic around him, like we talked about. But on the back end, they just could not hold up in this game. I mean, St. Just obviously is a rookie. I mean, he's going to get baptized by Stephon Diggs. It makes sense. But these are guys that, I mean, William Jackson got a lot of money this offseason. We were excited about, you know, Cam Curl. Bobby McCain is somebody that I don't even know if he played today, but look at the overall structure of the secondary. These are the guys that we thought this defense was going to be really good. And it has not been really good. So I think that's something definitely to keep an eye on.
It really is.
Another. Yeah.
But it was like that was what we talked about on Friday show was that it's they really only run three coverages. And when you run only three coverages, like the Seahawks defense did for years and years and years, Washington does quarters, three, and pressure. The offense knows where you're going to be in. Okay. You got to out execute them. So if you're not winning up front, you're not creating turnovers. It's like, it's really hard to live that way unless you're, you know, you're really starting to make the quarterbacks think and double clutch. And when you're not doing that, it looks kind of how today went.
Let's get to another quarterback performance that jumped out to me. Kirk Cousins was awesome today.
Awesome.
And awesome. We talk about, mention the stats that Stafford had. What's the thing with Kirk Cousins, right? Like, he's a play action machine. Like, that's why a lot of those efficiency numbers have been as good as they have been over the last few years, because within that structure of that offense, he looks pretty good. Today, on non-play action throws, he finished 24 of 29 for 268 yards and two touchdowns.
He looked like that. That's how it looked, man. Like that when I we were talking about the Rams and we said, hey, they added that whole section of drop back. That's what like the Vikings did with Kirk Cousins. That's who I wanted to talk about. They haven't operated like this in the past few years. Like this is a whole new animal. Like 11 personnel drop back on first and 10. Like they would not live that way before.
Well, I think that they were doing a lot of, and I'll have to go back and watch with like a little bit more detail. It seemed like they were doing a lot of 3-by-1 stuff. Yep. In order to give him information and like give him choices before the snap. Because coming into the season, talking to people there, they wanted to just give him tons and tons of clarity. Because when you can point Kirk Cousins in the right direction, he's one of the best pure throwers of the football in the world. Like, he's incredibly accurate. He doesn't have like a monster arm, but he's a really, really, really good pure passer when you are clearing up the picture for him and just pointing him where he's supposed to be going. And they were doing a lot of that just via formation today and just eating up the Seahawks to that single receiver side, no matter who it was. Thielen on the touchdown. They hit Jefferson on the whip on the touchdown. They hit Jefferson on the backside of a couple different things. And I just think that that's what they're trying to do. It's like, all right, by formation, here's what we're giving you. This is, you know where you want to go with the ball essentially before the ball is even snapped. Go that way. And he looks pretty damn good when you can just not muddy it for him. Just be like, all right, this is where you're going with it. Let's lean into you being a pretty damn good quarterback when you're not doing a lot of thinking.
And this isn't maybe the Seahawks defense, but especially with more coverages being more balanced or too high, just by definition, that's balanced. Being 3-by-1 is unbalanced, you know, but your offensive structure. Yep. So it's just, that's when you're saying those, giving those tells, it's just that natural tell. Like it's making defenses shift and have to adjust their rules to just by being in a different formation, you know, for them. What's really cool today is he had 30 completions today, I think, and they all went to his starting 11 personnel lineup. They all went to five guys, 30 completions to five guys. Nine,
that's pretty
nine,
awesome.
Nine to Justin Jefferson, seven to Tyler Conklin, six to Madison, six to Thielen, and two to Osborne. His 11 personnel lineup, his starting five, that's all they went to, which I just think is awesome. 38 targets to five guys. But that's how they operated. They just, nothing crazy. Like they were running slant flats on third down.
Yeah.
And it was mowing them down. Like the Seahawks.
But again, it's just like,
stop it.
This is what you have. Throw the ball to the guy who's going to be open. Yeah. It's just like just operating quickly on time. And he's pretty good when he can do that. Yeah. And that's a very simple concept.
You know how you knew how confident he is when you're saying operate on time. Kirk Cousins is one of the best throwers. The double post to Thielen. He had Jefferson wide open on the crosser. He didn't care. He hit the back foot, ripped that in there. And that thing.
That's
the exact
throw that I have in mind when I say that, by the way. Yep. Because that thing is a missile shot. Like that is a beautiful ball. And that is in general, like, little tiny subtle stuff today. The first screen to Madison, just the loft he puts on that ball to kind of give him a little bit of space to run. The placement on the Conklin touchdown. Yep. Just little tiny things. He just played quarterback really well today.
Yeah.
And then the Osborne play to seal the game on that blitz on third and five where he's throwing the ball off his back foot. That is just excellent. Like that's just a quarterback making a play in a huge moment. And that's what he did today. I mean, he's had stretches, man, where he gets hot and he looks really, really good. And today is one of those games. I mean, just when he's really feeling it, it's cool to watch. It's much more impressive than you would typically ascribe a quarterback like Kirk Cousins.
Exactly. Because we talk about that tier of guys being like the same, but that throw to Osborne is exactly it. That is the bad Kirk we've seen in the past. We've seen bad moments when he got put in like that. He trips over his feet. The ball gets sailed and tipped and gets picked. He drifted back away from the pressure and just threw that with touch, but not too much touch where someone can drive on it from the opposite side. Just enough to get it over. That was a beautiful throw. I'm glad you brought that one up because that just speaks to what he's doing right now. Just even the situations where it's not a clean pocket, he's still creating a throw, which is usually one of the negatives with Kirk Cousins. So that's pretty cool to see.
When Kirk Cousins is hitting his back foot and letting the ball loose, he can be really cool to watch. And that's exactly the mode that he was in today.
Why don't you explain this to me like I am an 8-year-old?
All right. Every week we have somebody, whether it was a coach, a team, anyone, explain something to us. Explain a performance. Explain what just happened because we need a little bit of context because it was so bad. And unfortunately today, that is the Chicago Bears offense. Yes, I'm sure people have seen some of the numbers. Justin Fields finished 6 of 20 for 68 yards. He took 9 sacks for 67 yards. For those of you counting at home, that means he took 3 more sacks than he had completions, and they finished with 1 net yard passing.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I don't even know where to start because it was a failure on every single level. There isn't one person who's at fault here. He didn't play well. He was put in terrible positions by his coaching staff, by the players around him. They played against a front that knew what was up. They took advantage of that today. The entire Browns defense was locked into the exact mode they needed to be in. I can't remember watching a game that was this futile from an NFL offense in I can't remember how long. And for it to be Justin Fields' first start with all the anticipation that came with it, it was pretty brutal, man. I don't know where you want to dive into this, but it was not a good day.
It was not. When they started with the field goal in the first drive, I was like, okay. All right. Nothing awful there.
They should have gone for it.
Yeah. Oh, I know, right? Oh, my God. You got to know what the situation is, man.
You're the worst team. You are not as good as the team you're playing. It's 4th and 2 at their 28-yard line. Go for it.
And also one of those things where it's like, I know – you're not supposed to know what the gambling lines are, but no, you're a heavy dog, Chicago Bears. Like, no, gotta know your situation. I'm sure Staley knew what his situation was today, but
you're playing against you're playing a rookie quarterback against a team that has been rolling on offense, rolling. It's inexcusable. Anyway, that's like the 10th most offensive thing they did today.
And I can go sack by sack because I do have notes on each sack, but it's even the fact.
If you were trying to tier it, if you were trying to say, all right, if I'm stacking up, who is most responsible next, how would you build that tier, that hierarchy of blame when it comes to what happened for the Chicago Bears today?
As things start getting unraveled, it's absolutely on the coaching staff for kind of panicking with their calls because they started stop chip helping on the left side. Like,
made no sense.
With Jason Peters, you know, I love Jason Peters, but, you know, we've got to know what Jason Peters is at this day and age against Myles Garrett. You can't be running scat protection, five-man protection. Sorry, scat's a different term. That's what it is. But five-man protection, you can't be doing that shit over and over because you're with the line that you have. The theory that I think Nagy had going into this game was, oh, we're going to go five-man protection because we're going to get the ball out. And the ball's going to get out quick so that D-line can't beat us. What have we talked about a million times what empty and five-man protection does? You do have to get the ball out quick. But if the defense knows that and they can just
they're sitting on shit. They were running routes for people in the second half. They were running routes for people. It consistently. It was brutal.
And it never adjusted. And it seems almost counterintuitive with this, but it's almost you have to lean into the punch. And I always say that line, but that's what it is because you have to trust yourself. And it's like, yeah, our O-line sucks. We can't hold up for a deep passing attack. No, they can't. But guess what helps that out? Seven-man protections, play action, move in the pocket, pull-up sprint outs. That just bullshit offense stuff that just eases everybody. Change the launch point for your quarterback. They ran zone read today a half dozen times at least. Nagy never adjusted that there's this thing called scrape exchange where the end can crash down the line so the quarterback keeps it and the linebacker just loops around. It's
or the corner.
College defenses have done it for like a decade plus now to stop zone read. And it's NFL defenses have done it ever since, you know, Colin Kaepernick torched the Packers defense. And it was like, oh, shit, how do we stop this? It's stuff that they have. Browns knew that. They did it a couple times. So, of course, it looked good to Fields. He's like, oh, shit, end's crashing. We're good. gets there and there's a linebacker standing there and he's trying to make a play. It's a 2-yard gain. Those types of things, they ran stretch. The first two sacks were stretch play action. I've never been in an offense that actually had this. I'm not saying like it's good or bad, but I know the weakness of it is a blitz from the weak side. They got blitzed from the weak side on it because that's the weakness of it. The Browns knew they were going to do that. So they blitzed the weak side with a Will linebacker, free runner. I think that was sack number two. Sack number three, Trent Williams stumbles.
Sack number two, though, I thought that was the RPO where he had Mooney. Fields.
I'm missing one sack. That's what I was trying to go through these. Okay, cool, because my count's off. But they had the – okay, so what was the one that Clowney knifes inside? Like, Clowney knifes inside, that's the stretch PA. And then it was – I mean, there's so many that we
– How do you account for that? Do you – because Ifedi multiple times today set as if it seemed like he was getting help inside or thought he was going to and didn't. And it became a problem on multiple occasions. And that's one of those things where I'm not trying to ascribe blame, but when we talk about an offense that isn't getting details right, that's what it looks like. Somebody's fucking up there. I don't know who it is, but somebody is.
And even if it fucks up once, like that happened, Clowney nice inside. That's what Clowney does. He Clowney goes rogue. He does the better be plays all the time. He cuts inside. He does it against a run all the time. And you got to know that. So Ifedi on the one, like just oversets on it. And it's like, I think he was lined up tight on him. And it's like, why are you oversetting on that? That's a detail thing. Like you say, that's a player's man, player coach scheme kind of thing. Trent Williams stumbling on one. There's a juke route where Allen Robinson stumbled on it, or the guy ran the route for him. They squeezed it. Like they knew on third down, they're going Allen Robinson. Like the Browns had a great game plan on defense. There's a sack, I think sack, I don't even know what it is, 5, 6, or 7. Third and 10, no chip out. Ifedi gets beat. Sack 6, empty on third and long. Empty on third and long. That's all I need to say, really. Fields breaks contained, but gets tripped up because, you know, that's just what goes on.
It felt like he could have, on that one, they ran a stunt. It felt like he could have escaped to the right. Instead, he bailed to the left and Garrett caught up to him. But very few of these, in my opinion, were on him. I thought he missed an RPO to Mooney. Okay. Where you have to let that rip.
Yeah.
Like that is open. But that was very rare today. Because even if stuff was coming open, there were people in his lap this entire game. Yes. They were going 3 for 3 on one side and running a stunt with the end coming off where Garrett would either roast Daniels as a 3 technique or be the penetrator on a stunt and be in the quarterback's lap the entire game. It was malpractice.
Yeah.
And even they kept trying to run that slide play action we talked about that Herbert ran, but the guy was crashing off the edge.
Yep.
Like that has been a coaching point throughout the league this year against these boot teams is that teams are just saying, fuck it. I don't care if you complete this pass to the tight end. I don't care if the running back gets the ball and I'm not defending the run here. I am going to make a splash, devastating play. Mm-hmm. And they're just tearing after quarterbacks on that. It's happening all over the NFL. Over the course of a game, you have to have an answer for that if they keep bringing that guy off there. It's as simple as, one, don't run it, or two, just have that tight end seal off the backside.
Yep.
Like, really, really frustrating to watch these things just pile up and pile up and pile up. And then, when it happens 2 or 3 or 4 times, then he's just in his own head about this stuff. Then you're thinking about the rush the entire play. You're staring at it. And then that starts happening. And then eventually they were just sitting on everything. I mean, there's so many plays in the second half where you have guys that are a yard ahead of where the receiver is going on certain routes. And it's just, there's nothing you can do. At that point, it just starts to unravel and you lose yourself. And that's exactly what happened today.
Which is, it's just so frustrating because it just shows also a lack of awareness of what your quarterback strengths are. Like the best thing Justin Fields did was push the freaking ball down the field in college.
Yes.
And stand in there. And that's where that whole lock onto his receiver thing started, which is bullshit. But it was like with that stuff, it was all down the field and then you check it down, touchdown to check down. That's what he operated in. They ran like a quick game RPO offense today. And it was like, yeah, he can do it. But it's like, it just showed a lack of what he can do well. And that's why I was excited to see Justin Fields, because I wanted to see him throwing overs and goes and posts and sail routes and big boy throws. And instead it looked like It looked like Fields was out and they had to start Dalton. And that's the offense they ran for Dalton. That's what it looked like more today. It just, and also like the most malpractice thing, I think it was at the end when they just fed him to the Wolves and they just stopped providing chip help. And they just went five man protections. That was just that's bad. That's just like, it's like, you're just hurting him. Like, I hate that kind of stuff. Cause that's just the defense is teeing off. The defense knows what you're doing and you're just not going to help him out. And we saw what happened. And I just don't like that. They Fields got pressured on 55% of his dropbacks, pressured on 55%, which is just absolutely.
And people are going to say it's cause he held onto the ball too long. There were a couple of throws today where he should have gotten rid of the ball, but that was not the biggest problem today. There were 10 biggest problems today. When I was worried about him playing, this is why. Yeah. This is why. Yeah. I mean, this is exactly why. You're playing against a team that is completely outmanning you up front.
Yep.
And you have a quarterback that mentally cannot protect himself yet. And you have a coaching staff who's not able to help him. This was the disaster scenario. This is exactly what I had in mind when I was like, man, the scar tissue and the bad habits and... You have any more of these days where he's taking 9 sacks and getting hit 15 times, getting pressured 55% of the time? This is where things start to go off the rails. And this is literally the worst case scenario. This is the disaster that I feared coming into the season when if he were going to play early.
I know. I watched the game last week and I was optimistic. I was like, okay, they did enough nice things where it's like, okay, they understand what he's doing. And I saw what Fields, how he was operating before the snap and he changing the protection and all that stuff. Like I was pretty fired up because he had already grown from preseason where he's adjusting a protection. And it was like on this today, it was just by the time he could even get his head straight, it was like the game's over. Like as far as their offense, that offense was kaput in the second quarter. Just they, and it was like, okay, halftime, you can adjust. All right, we can chalk up that old adage that it's like, okay, they're going to adjust at halftime. And it's like nothing happened from that. And yeah, we saw what we saw.
Just God, there's so many plays today. They had there was a 1st and 10 with 5:45 in the third quarter. Darnell Mooney jogs in motion from right to left, which I assume was supposed to be jet motion. He jogs in motion from right to left. No
urgency.
Miles Garrett pays no mind, zero mind whatsoever. Tears off the edge on one of those slide boots and just blows up the entire play. There was another boot where he was rolled to the right. They ran like a flood concept to that side. Komet's in the flat. He turns it up the sideline for some totally unknown reason. You have Jimmy Graham in 2021 running the deep over behind it. It takes him 10 minutes to get over there. So they're standing in the exact same spot because Komet had taken it up the sideline. So there's no space between them. And then he throws a pretty good ball to Goodwin on the third level of that. Goodwin doesn't come back to the ball and it falls incomplete. It's like, this is a nightmare. Like, it just every single aspect of what they're doing is wrong. There's something wrong with every single thing about what they're doing. It's not all on the quarterback.
They went 1 for 11 on third down. And it was the only one was when he pinned it on Allen Robinson. They had finally an isolated situation on third long, and they ran up like a somewhat intermediate throw. And it was like a deep stop route, like 12 yards. They finally got past 8 yards on a route. It was bad.
I'm glad I looked forward to this all week. It was really enjoyable. I had a really, really good time.
I'm glad I wrote an article on Justin Fields on Friday.
Let's keep the tone nice and rosy here. Another thing I need an explanation for. Why did the Steelers think that this was going to go any differently with Ben Roethlisberger? I think they're cooked, man.
I do too.
I mean, I don't really know what else to say. He averaged 5.41 air yards per attempt today. Talk about Josh Allen's completion percentage. Ben Roethlisberger, -7.2 completion percentage under expectation. Najee Harris had 18 targets.
Yeah. Yeah. 17 carries, 18 targets. Or 14 carries, 18 targets.
Their offense is completely broken. I don't know. It's week 3. I understand that things can get better. I don't understand a path to this getting better.
No.
I don't think there's an argument for why it would.
But they don't have a young quarterback to go to. They just like it's, I mean, Dwayne Haskins, but it's just this offense. When we watched, we were like, okay, excited. Matt Canada is the mad scientist. And okay, all right, what all this motion? Okay, they're going to maybe some more play action stuff because they're going to, you know, they drafted Najee Harris in the first round. They're invested in the run, right? And then we watched it in the preseason. What did we say? We're like, oh, it's exactly the same. It's like a couple more motions in the red zone. Like that's really what it is. They can't keep doing this RPO shit. Like they just run it. Like they can't give Ben the option anymore. He's throwing like quick outs when they have a run play. And it's like, great, Chase Claypool will make a guy miss and they get some yards. But it's like the opportunity cost of those is just getting them all out of rhythm. And you're putting it in a guy's hands that can't create anymore. So if that doesn't work, it's fucked. Like the whole play, everything's a one and done read. Like the like wedge screen that they've done for like years and years and years. Bengals had a great play on it. They had a pressure look, double A gap, and then they buzzed out and all their linebackers just ran straight at the bunch because they knew what was coming. And Big Ben didn't know what to do. He went, he like Statue of Liberty'd it. He like just held the ball in the air and he was like, oh, and he like spiked.
That was another problem today is that even when they were struggling last year, at least he was getting the ball out.
Yeah.
Today, just holding on to it. I mean, they had a 7-man heavy play action, 7-man protection at one point in this game. He took a sack on it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was happening a lot where he's just eating the ball, trying to make something happen with his legs, which definitely isn't happening at this stage of what's going on. I mean, it looked really, really bad today.
The shovel pass, he has to shuffle. He's like shuffling and then it's like, he doesn't even pitch it with his left hand. He just like flicks it with his right hand, like just throwing the shovel. It's not even a shovel. It's a dart. It's like a little mini dart. I know it's bad. It was everything we thought. I mean, the 4th and 10 at the end of the game. Oh my God. Like thinking like, okay, all right. If you're going to say, hey, you're going to be the point guard and be the cerebral guy and I'm going to let Dink and Dunk. Everyone thinks they could be Aaron Rodgers now. I mean, everyone just for like 5 years now, everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to operate out no huddle and I'm just going to Dink and Dunk and throw all these short throws to everybody. The 4th and 10 at the end of the game, they baited him thinking it was a pressure. And he's like, oh, I'm going to outflank it and throw it to Najee Harris. And it was like, they had a post coming right behind it. And it's just like 4th and 10 and you're throwing it short, not even short of the sticks, short of the line of scrimmage. And that's a rough
every road. Every time he pushed the ball even slightly down the field today, it was like, it was depressing to watch.
T-shirt I mean, cannon.
just airmail and stuff. I mean, just nowhere in the vicinity. And it's pretty terrible right now. And again, there just don't seem to be that many routes to getting a lot better. Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's get to our next segment here. I'm going to ask you to slow me down a little bit.
Pump your brakes, kid.
We know that I can occasionally get overzealous. It's one of my defining personality traits. I'm willing to admit that. So I think we're going to throw out some ideas here over the rest of the season, and I'm going to have you kind of pull me back. Are the Raiders legitimate Super Bowl contenders? Are the 3-0 Las Vegas Raiders legitimate Super Bowl contenders? Here's why I say this. I know this was not the most impressive win. This is a game you lose.
Yeah.
Against a feisty team where you throw a pick six in the first quarter. You don't get a 4th and 1 on your own 30-something yard line early in the game. You go down 14-0. It's like, you know, like the Chiefs today. That's a game you lose. You just, even if you can stay in it, even if you put up a fight, this is often a game you lose. Instead, the Raiders win this game. And I don't know, man. Like, I just think that there's a lot of encouraging things happening there right now. And I don't know. I'm wondering, I'm willing to say it. I'm willing to say that they are a relevant team in the AFC playoff picture. That's as far as I will go.
Okay, yeah, we're not pumping the brakes. We're yielding. Yeah, we're yielding at the yellow light right now because that's kind of what it is. I trust this offense. I as far as definitely the passing tech. I've seen enough where it's I like the 12 heavy 21 22 13 personnel. Downfield passing attack. And it's not just play action. Like they're just dropping back from these heavy looks, which is really fun. The run game, but on the flip side, I don't still trust this defense. I just don't to be a true Super Bowl contender, but more of a feisty playoff team. I think that's where we're both leaning on is
how good of a defense do you have to be though? Like how good of a defense do you have to be a real contender? If this offense is one of the like 7 best offenses in the league, or even better than that by the end of the season, if their offensive line comes together, they got young pieces up there, if they really come coalesce over the rest of the year and they're like the 5th best offense in the NFL, how good does their defense really have to be?
They just have to be not shit, I guess. They have to be like...
And they have not been shit.
22nd-ish.
They've been tolerable.
Yes.
And they have been that. They are 9th in EPA per play through 3 games.
That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
I know they've played Jacoby Brissett, the Steelers team we just talked about being cooked, and they played the Ravens in week one.
They played the Ravens in week one with no
offensive tackles. So the context is important, and EPA is not adjusted for opponent. But
But the vision coming into this year for this Raiders team was this. We have the formula offensively. We just need a little couple tweaks here and there. If we get a little bit more from Derek, where it's, and the way he's making plays, like under pressure and just out of structure, like that is the, that's the step they need. I thought he played extremely well last year and over the last couple years. If you look at a lot of the numbers, he was being more aggressive down the field last year. But this out of structure stuff where he's making plays on the move, that's cool. That is a little bit different than what we've seen. You combine that with Ruggs looking like a real player now.
Yes.
Where that is, I mean, he's making contested catches. He's a real part of the offense.
Balls.
Yes. And then obviously, and Edwards has given them just kind of that big body option that I think only makes plays in the fourth quarter or overtime when the game is on the line, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And then Waller is like a true superstar, right?
Yeah.
And I think that all of those pieces, and so again, just turn the volume up a tiny bit on what it's been over the last 2 years. And then we just need a defense that is full of professionals. And I think that's what you're getting. Like, I don't think they're going to have this tear the league down pass rush over the course of the entire season. But I do think Crosby and Ngakoue are useful players.
Yes.
And I think that Casey Hayward is playing extremely well. And if Morig can be somebody that plays pretty well as a rookie and is just a solid, reliable piece back there, it's all they need to be is fine. And I do think that there is a pathway for that version of this team to exist.
The offensive part, I'm going to...
You're still not buying the defense. You're still just not buying it.
I know. I'm just like, I'm just picturing, because I'm like, yeah, man, you're like starting to talk me into it. I was like, yeah, you know, the linebackers didn't look too bad. And I was like, oh, but any team that can run on them, I think is they're going to give a lot of issues. I know they play the Ravens, but I'm not, that game is such an outlier, I think, week ones are. But I do 100% believe in the offense, because like you were bringing up the point with Renfrow and Waller and Ruggs.
Oh, Renfrow too. I didn't even mention Renfrow, who's playing awesome this year.
Oh my God. I know he's fantastic. But that is so hard to stop, because maybe it's kind of like the Packers in the sense they have the alpha with Davante Adams and a whole bunch of nice little role players with it.
Yes.
Same kind of thing with Waller and then all these other guys in the sense, well, Renfrow is like in his own role is like a superstar role player, but it's like those guys are really hard to stop for a defense throughout an entire game. Like one-offs, you can stop them, but having a tight end and a legit move around slot guy. And then
when you have matchup nightmares and a coach that creates matchups, that is where they get really dangerous. And that's exactly what this offense is. And that's why it's so fun to watch.
Yeah. The puzzle pieces are fitting really nicely. Yes. And then you just got Ruggs up at the top. Like, it's like, okay, that's nice. It's not a lot of overlap with their skill sets, but that works if you're designing really good plays. And that's what they're doing. And that's, I know, but I just, like you said, I just can't believe the defense. It's just, but, and they're not going to play Jacoby Brissett every week. And it's just, this offense is legitimately fun. And it's, that is what's going to carry
them. I love that you keep saying the offense.
I can't see Yannick Ngakoue playing against the run for 18 weeks or 17 weeks and then going into January and like playing these teams are just going to pound it right at him. I don't know. It's tough.
The whole point of this is for me to play devil's advocate a little bit during this segment, which is going to create a lot of just,
I can't wait,
horrible sound bites that people are going to come back and bite me with. But yeah. Gus Bradley is the definition of good enough. Like, that's exactly what he's supposed to be.
Mendoza line.
You hire Gus Bradley so you can be good enough. And I think that's what they're trying to do. And I think so far, it's been okay. I am curious to see where it goes from here. Because I was super skeptical of it. Because the way they built this, right? By going to get the Gus Bradley All-Stars with Ngakoue and Casey Hayward and KJ Wright and Denzel Perryman. And Quentin Jefferson. Like, it was a joke. Like, it does work to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. The problem is, as you get deeper into the AFC playoffs, you're going to be playing against a team like the Bills, who just has just talent lining the whole roster. Yep. And their upside on defense is much higher than yours. And that's the concern. But I will say, I do think that this formula could make them relevant deep into the season And that's what I'll say. That's as far as I'm willing to go.
Hey, how about AFC West?
We're gonna have to play. We're gonna have to play with this segment. We're gonna have to see how dangerous I'm willing to get with some of this stuff, and how far of a limb I'm willing to walk out on. Because
how much?
I'm afraid of the internet for the most part. So
yeah. How much liability you're willing to hang out there? Like that's,
how much I hate myself. We're gonna have to start figuring that out.
Oh, I know. So we need some more of these Bears games, so we could just get the hottest takes going.
Just because I have nothing left to lose. Yeah. That's exactly what we need.
Just fire them all off.
Not today, my good man. I'm feeling saucy.
All right. Every week, we like to talk about the secret sauce that helped the team win. Just a little kind of understated aspect of a game or a particular concept or idea that we noticed that we felt might be important. So you saw something during the Sunday night game that you wanted to point out. Why don't you take it from here?
Yeah, and it won't be long. It's pretty simple thing to kind of explain. But the Jaire Alexander interception, where he made a hell of an athletic play and basically ran over the top of a post route coming from the opposite side.
But just normal stuff. Just normal casual stuff. Yeah.
And actually, this is a part of the reason why this is hilarious that you probably only see this in the NFL, is because you can do this with NFL caliber athletes. I really want to say this term is called slingshot, and I've referenced it before, but if defensive guys, if you want to correct me in my Twitter,
please do at
Nate_Tice. Yeah. You can tweet right at me with this, but we're seeing more of these quarters coverages, and with quarters coverages with too high stuff, a good way to really hit a shot play on this, and this is the only time Jimmy G went deep tonight, is running a post over combination or a dig post combination. And it is a classic combination. You've heard me on this podcast and Robert on this podcast talk about so many teams doing it, because we love it. We love posts and overs. They're fun plays. It's big shot plays. It's awesome offense, touchdown to check down. On these against quarters, the safety is going to drive on those overs, and he's going to come downwards on them and drive on the overs. The corner playing the post that has outside leverage, naturally, that's going to create a nice wide open post throw with a whole bunch of space to work with for that post where the quarterback can lay it out there front side. How defenses, especially in the NFL, combat this is they slingshot the opposite corner all the way back in the post, like Jaire tonight. And what you're doing is you're basically just squeezing the route. Now you got two guys forming a V, you know, vicing this post route that's going deep. And we've seen it crop up a couple times in the first 3 weeks, and I can name one each week. Week one, Aaron Rodgers threw the deep pick, and he was kind of just saying F it and just threw this ball up anyways. Mm-hmm. But the Saints, blank on who it is, but the Saints corner sprinted and ran the post for the guy. Same thing. That's what that was. It was hit that guy coming from the opposite side. He had nothing to hold him. And you just run to the post, just taking away that post route. It's kind of hard to call both things post, because there's post safety, there's post route, there's running to the post, which is the deep middle of the field. So I'm sorry if I'm confusing anybody, but that's what football is. It's a lot of using the same terms to describe five different things. and then last week, the Vikings had one against the Cardinals. And what it was, Kyler ended up throwing this short. It was in the red zone or near the red zone. He threw it right at the goal line. He ended up underthrowing the ball, so the corner made it, or the safety drove on it, picked it off, and stepped in front. But Breshad Breeland was coming from the opposite side and running to the post. He was going to pick it off anyways. And we're seeing more and more of this just because of the natural, what we've talked about for months and months and months, more too high defenses. So now this is offenses are attacking that. We're seeing more posts and overs, post dig combinations that are going to take advantage of that safety driving. So now it's cool to see what's the defensive answer to that. You're not going to just let teams hit posts on you over and over and over. Wait, otherwise, you just can't run quarters. So this is, it's just a cool way of like, oh, how do you defend that? Okay, this. And I actually had Andy Hutchins tweeted at me. He replied, he was like, so what does a offense do to kind of take advantage of that? Like, you know what, or like, what, how do you hold Jaire Alexander? And it's like, Captain Hindsight says, run a different pass design. that's basically, that's your answer. Just check it down and okay, live to play another day. Hopefully your quarterback sees that guy flying to the post. Jimmy G did not, but it's also really what it is. It's like, okay, we got to take advantage of that somehow. We run a corner. We run something with the Rams ran in week one where it looks like a post and over, and then whoop, there goes Van Jefferson run to the high corner on a pylon route. That's what the next tweak is. But it's cool because we're going to see this throughout the league. We're seeing the same types of offenses, these play action shots, and we're going to see these same types of defenses. So you're going to just see this kind of combination play out a couple times. Helps when you have Jaire Alexander running faster than the post route. That also helps to be able to do that. That's probably why you only see
not
that
today, my good man. I'm feeling saucy.
It's funny because I was talking to an offensive play caller coming into the year about some of the more quarters and what it would mean. He said against an older version of quarters, it's a little bit more aggressive. When you are driving on things, you're throwing posts all day. Like that was the answer. You're throwing posts all day. So if you're throwing posts all day, this is how defenses have to respond, which is great. So again, the whole point of this segment is so when you're watching, you can be the Leo meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which someone tweeted us this week about a windback block.
Yes.
We love you. It's exactly what we're shooting for. You. So we sincerely appreciate it.
You guys don't realize how excited that makes me when you guys do that.
All Nate wants is recognition for windback blocks. That's all he wants in the world. Yes. All right. Before we get out of here, it's time to talk about who won the belt in the week 3.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
I love you, Kent.
I love that we're going to be cycling those in and out.
We're changing it weekly now. This is awesome.
Let me rephrase. The only thing Nate wants in the world is you recognizing windback blocks and pro wrestling references. That's all you want in the world. There's really only one way to go with this, and this is with the man who kicked a 66-yard field goal today and won the game for the Ravens. So Drew Brees pointed this out on NBC, which was, and I noticed it in the moment, but I thought it was a mistake. So when he lined up, first of all, the throw that Lamar made to set this up was just ridiculous.
Fourth and forever.
But when Tucker lined up to kick the field goal, he moved. And I thought that he had like a false step and that he thought that in whatever reason his timing is thrown off. But Brees observed that he actually took like a crow hop before he got into his approach because he knew he needed more juice, which is amazing.
Happy Gilmore.
I mean, that's exactly what it was. It was Happy Gilmore kicking. It was awesome. And it could not have been more perfect. The fact that it hit the crossbar and then just had that moment where on TV, there's no way to know which direction it's going. So all you see is it pop up and I'm sitting there with my brother and I'm like, oh my God, because it looked good. As soon as left his foot, I was like, it's good. It's good. And then it hits the crossbar and I was like, oh, and then it plops in and I just started going crazy. It was what an awesome moment. And the fact that, I don't think there's any conversation. He's the greatest kicker of all time.
Yeah,
like he already was the greatest kicker of all time, and now the fact that he has this feather in his cap and the belt around his waist, you got to give it to the guy. What a moment!
I didn't even know that was like a discussion that he's the greatest kicker of all time.
He definitely is.
Oh, I know. So that title belt is not only for the week, but it's like he's the linear champion for having the kicker belt as far as
the fact that he's the most accurate kicker of all time, and he plays in outdoor stadiums.
In Baltimore,
plays in the AFC North. He plays a game a year in Heinz Field, and he's the most accurate kicker in NFL history. It's absurd.
Oh, no dome games or anything like that. Oh, I know. I actually thought at first it hit the camera on the goalpost. And I was like, that would be actually pretty awesome if it did that. But the crow hop's hilarious. That is a good, the happy Gilmore. Because Drew Brees, of course, knows that. Probably especially late career Drew Brees, and knowing when you have to throw a Hail Mary.
Look at you, just taking shots.
I should know. I can't make fun of anyone with that. But it's those little crow hops, man. You have to do it. You have to all right, here we go. You're just taking that little hop up and you're getting in rhythm. You're throwing it. You ever seen of course you've seen this. Like the old QB contest they used to do at the Pro Bowl and stuff.
Oh, of course.
Watching all the quarterbacks and then throw the longest throw. Because every quarterback I've ever been around kind of has a different way to throw your longest throw. Like I almost needed someone to trot. So I almost tricked my brain into throwing it. Leading them.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious watching Peyton Manning do it. Some guys just crow hop. Brett Favre, I think, did it where he would just crow hop and just whip it. Peyton, of course, did a full cadence and would do a full play action drop back. And then would take five crow hops into it and throw it 64
he
yards.
Couldn't do it without it. Those parts of the process, if those weren't in there, he just physically couldn't do it.
He had to do the entire thing. Look it up. It's hilarious. I love it because he couldn't even just do a drop back. He had to do a play action, turn his back. It's like, come on, man. Come on, Peyton. He just can't get out of that machine robot world. But it's awesome. I mean, it's fun talking about, we talked about the Jankowski kick over a decade ago when Lane Kiffin was the head coach and he had him kick the 70-something yarder.
Was the thing. We had both outcomes today. Yes. We had the 66-yarder that went in. We had the 68-yarder that was returned 109 yards for a touchdown.
Best possible outcome.
It's almost a bad thing that Prater made the field goal last week, because then Cliff's like, oh, let's trot him back out there. And then they return at 109 yards for a score. Just a great week for kicking moments. Great week for kicking moments, and a great week for NFL football.
Didn't matter last week's was, you know, indoor, you know, anything on turf. We're going road at Jacksonville.
What do you think humidity was in Jacksonville? That thick air. Oh, it's miserable.
Down. I know. And the fact is, like, Urban didn't even know how to like celebrate, which is also hilarious. Like, he like didn't know that, like, he like just didn't know. Like, everyone's like rocking him. He's just like, oh my God. Like, you know, it's like, oh
man, is anhedonia personified. All right. Wait, what? Before we get out of here, a couple things that we're keeping an eye on for this week that we did not get to. I want to go back and watch the Colts offense. I did not watch much of that game today. It seemed really bad. You look at some of the numbers and they're startling and a little bit disconcerting. Not a little bit, very unsettling if you're a Colts fan. The trade might be bad news. It might be bad news. He is not playing very well. I want to watch the Patriots offense ahead of this Bucs game. I don't know if you knew this, but the Bucs are playing the Patriots next week.
Oh, wow.
I think the Dell commercial is just pure emotional manipulation. They played it. I was like, all right, I get it. I'm into it a little bit. That's fine. I hate that I like it, but I'm into it a little bit.
We've hit that age where you're just kind of like,
oh, it's okay. Lowest common denominator. In the lowest common denominator, which is fine. At this point, one of the greatest transitions in my life I've ever made is just not giving a shit about being cool anymore. It has been a freeing, freeing experience for me, and we have certainly reached that.
I have board games behind me right now.
do not care anymore. So I'm going to go back and watch the Patriots offense this week. Also, the Broncos defense. They play the Jets this week, but
yes,
they've been playing well. Obviously, the Broncos are 3-0. We talked a lot about the Broncos offense last week when Nick Hosmeyer was on. We were talking with him, with Lindsay. So I want to kind of dig into the Broncos defense a little bit this week. We'll get to all of that stuff on the Athletic Football Show over the next few days. In the meantime, really appreciate you guys listening. Please subscribe to The Athletic if you have not. TheAthletic.com/football show. I think I might write this week. So you can come check that out. Sometimes I still write. So I have something I've been cooking up, and this is the week to break it out. Somebody played well, and I'm going to use it as an excuse. So please check back on that. TheAthletic.com/football show. Please rate and review the podcast on Apple. If you're an Apple listener, I would sincerely appreciate you guys doing that. Also, please submit to the mailbag. We were doing a mailbag episode. We're recording tomorrow afternoon with Charles McDonald from For the Win. Hey. So please tune in to that and submit your questions for me and Chuck. Email them to athleticfootballshow@gmail.com. Or if you prefer, which we love, leave us a voicemail. 872-222-7073. That's on the screen for you YouTube people. For those listening on the podcast version, 872-222-7073. Leave a message, send an email. We'll get to the mailbag this week. Until then, really, really appreciate you guys listening. Always nice to spend a time with you on a Sunday night, and always good to spend the time with you, my friend. I will see you later this week.
Sounds good. Can't wait.
All right. See you guys later.
This was the Athletic Football Show.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.